That's really fun to say. Hexachordal, what is it?
Hexachordal combinatoriality.
Hexachordal combinatoriality. Oof.
Yeah. We'll get back to that probably never.
It's almost as good as the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis.
Ooh. Are we having
dopaminergic pathways? What?
Oh.
Hey, this is Nicole.
And I'm Mark.
And you're listening to Never Mind the Music. Today, I'm very excited because we're talking about one of my favorite bands of all time.
TLC. But I don't think we're talking about the song you would have expected us to talk about, right?
No, it's not my favorite TLC song.
No, we are talking about Baby, 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 which is an awesome song, but not necessarily the first one you'd think.
Got that iconic T-Boz rasp.
Oh my God.
Voice.
Her voice is so scratchy and deep. Mm-hmm. And yeah, iconic. So this is from Ooh on the TLC tip from 1992. And my question for you, that has seven O's in the Ooh.
Okay.
How would the pronunciation be different if there were only, let's say, five O's or if there were 10 O's on the Ooh?
You had like a little intonation. You went, ooh, and I don't think you would get that with just five. Ooh, ew, I don't know. They say it a lot in like the marketing of this album, and they're more high up. They go like, ooh, that's how they say it.
Oh, yeah. See, I needed to listen to some early 90s interviews or something to see how it was pronounced back in the wild.
I don't like to use the word cringe anymore, but they're kind of cringy.
What's cringy?
Like their early interviews.
Oh, really?
Just because they're so like early 90s, very, very prototypical.
I bet there's not a lot that isn't cringe from the early 90s.
Especially this album. I think we can talk more about it. All right. Know, I need to warn you listeners, I know too much about TLC.
So. All right. So we'll get there. So this song, though, hit number two. It is the most successful on that album. But to be clear, way less famous than, for example, Creep, Waterfalls, No Scrubs, or Unpretty, which were all number ones. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to talk about Waterfalls because that's like,
iconic.
We talked about, listeners, we recorded this after an episode where TLC came up and I hinted at, oh, we're going to do TLC. I assumed we were going to do Waterfalls, but I couldn't stop myself from just talking about how awesome the bass guitar is in that song.
Waterfalls. Yeah.
There's cool melodies. Mm-hmm. There's really, interesting lyrics. There's really good vocal harmonies, an amazing hook. I can't do anything but listen to
it's
bass.
So good. Do you have a clip?
It. That's bass.
It's so good. And the video is so good. And they had like the CGI. They have like CGI as water creatures.
But Nicole, the bass.
It's like juicy and delicious.
The bass.
Poor Left Eye too.
Left Eye. Okay, maybe we'll talk about Left Eye. So yeah, Waterfalls. I know most of you are here to hopefully hear about that song. But we're talking about Baby, Baby, Baby. This song was written by Babyface, Kenneth Edmonds, who, of course, mm-hmm. has written 5 million songs that are all number ones. Yep. L.A. Reid, Antonio Reid, wrote some music, but more of a record executive. And Daryl Simmons. L.A. Reid, by the way, I don't know much about it. Listeners, write in. Recently accused of sexual misconduct by former employees. So I don't know more than that. So I don't want to say more than that. But I also didn't want to leave that completely neglected. So should we talk about Left Eye and all that later now? Should we talk about the music for a little bit? What do we want to do, Nicole?
There's so much. I think let's talk about Baby, Baby, Baby as like a standalone artifact of the TLC legacy, because the themes of this song do connect with a lot of the biographical information.
Oh, that's interesting.
Of like Chili's life, Rosanda, and T-Boz Tion's life. They are the surviving members of TLC. And I think that we can save Lisa Left Eye Lopez maybe for a standalone side piece episode.
a side piece
which
episode?
Is relevant, actually. It's pretty relevant.
Side piece. Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
No,
all right.
Not really.
All right. Well, let's have the conversation. And, listeners, remember, every other week we do a full episode. The other ones, we give bonus episodes. Maybe you'll be hearing some more conversation about TLC on another day.
I need like 45 minutes of just TLC lore. I just need to unload some TLC lore.
There's probably a actual TLC podcast that you should guest on then.
Do you think that there is?
I bet. We should look it up.
Baby, baby, baby.
All right.
Off of their Ooh on the TLC Tip debut album.
Yeah.
1992.
And I'm going to talk about stuff that has nothing to do with a lot of the stuff that you probably want to talk about. But okay. We pride ourselves in being able to find the connective tissue, right? Mm-hmm. And I can retroactively make myself sound more smart by once you talk to me about the brain stuff, I can say, ooh, see, it just proves what I'm trying to teach. But I want to talk about the key of this song.
Okay.
We've talked about key in other episodes. Remember, the key is like the centrality of the song. If a song is in the key of D, it uses a certain sets of notes, and those notes all point to D as being the most important, right?
Yeah, and I feel like D is a boring key.
D was thought of as a bright and triumphant key back in the day where that mattered. And that mattered for reasons due to instrumentation and tuning.
Yeah, it sounds boring.
That I will not get into right now. It is boring. No, it's actually fascinating.
Sure.
I will not get into it right now and probably won't get into it in a bonus episode either, listeners. But write in and maybe I'll tell you. Okay. So the cool thing about this is the chords and the melody combine to make the key ambiguous. And we have not talked about that in this podcast yet. I'm always like, this song's in F sharp major or this song's in B minor. Not, I don't know what song this key is in. And this song is a case where you actually have to fight a little hard to figure out what key you're in without looking at the sheet music and it just telling you, right? The cool thing is that it does that by giving you conflicting information. And I want to share that with you. And I feel like part of that blurriness is what makes this song so compelling and so cool. The melody and the chords don't agree on the same story. So let's listen, of course, once again, to the hook. I love that part. Now, what key is it in?
D.
D. Good guess. that's actually a reasonable guess. It's close, but let's actually figure out how we can figure this out. Let's listen just to the melody. When we're thinking of the key, listeners, we're thinking of which note feels like home. Which note is the main note?
To me, the last note feels like home. Is that right?
I don't hear that as home. I feel like that's not done. Mm. I don't think we're hearing home really now at all. It's hard. I'm going to sell you on what I think later.
Okay.
But it's ambiguous. And part of why it's ambiguous is this just has a few notes. And those notes belong to a lot of different keys. Those notes could be in B minor. Those notes could be in D major that you said. Those notes could be in A. Lots of different options. I have to say, most of my Googling around to see what other people think, I see more often than anything, people say that this song is in the key of B minor. Why? Well, the first chord of almost every phrase is B minor. And so your brain sort of orients towards that. That doesn't necessarily mean that's true. Those notes that we just heard the tune do fit B minor. It could be
sure.
Right. So it also could be F sharp minor, which is another key that's close in notes. And it uses the same notes that we just heard.
That doesn't sound like it's it to me either.
We're going to test it. We're going to find out. Well, this is an investigation.
Oh, I love doing. That.
The last option that seems reasonable, it's not D. I would say A major.
I vote that one.
So it sounds major to you.
Even that, no, but it's closer.
Let's figure it out.
Kind of both. In the background, they should play like a little progression that sounds major the first time, but then the second time it sounds minor. So I don't
know. So it's not clear from hearing just the tune. Let's focus on the chords and see if they give us more information. Luckily, the beginning of this song, the intro, plays just the chords. So we start with a B minor chord, a B minor 7 chord, and it ends on an F sharp minor chord. So it's fine. Either of those keys could work. But the problem is that middle chord, which happens to be a C sharp minor, does not exist in the key of B minor. So it's unlikely to be that. Let me play you just those chords without the rest of the stuff. That middle chord messes it up.
Yeah.
It sounds great, but B minor doesn't quite make sense, even though everybody in the internet seems to think it's that. Those chords are in F sharp minor, but they're also in A major, like I mentioned.
Yeah.
But A major isn't even a chord they play. Nobody sings A major. Nobody plays A major, even though you said, oh, that one sounds right.
It sounds right.
Even though it suggests that it could be A major, but there's no evidence that it is A major. And that's what's so cool. It's totally ambiguous.
Do you like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day, but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass the Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come baby come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
So can we need more information.
Can
Go ahead.
I just interrupt you? Talk about the internet culture around the investigation of TLC's Baby, Baby, Baby. Like, where are you getting sourcing information? Like Reddit or just a Google search? Or
so the way the sausage is made is I have a nice repartee between my own ears and the internet. Right?
Sure.
So I listen to something. Usually I'm listening to the thing and I go, oh, that's a cool episode because I hear something I want to talk about. What I heard in this case was, what key is this in? And then I try to figure it out. And then, yeah, I Google it. I go on YouTube to watch people playing it.
Sure.
This song has a lot fewer people playing it and talking about it. You can't really find sheet music for this song.
So it's not a surprise.
So people, the B minor, you say it's not a surprise, but people sell everything, right?
Yeah,
you
can find
You can find a piano vocal transcription of songs with no piano, right?
And I mean, this would make a great marching band set, like just TLC's greatest hits.
I bet there's a good 90s marching band that totally did
Waterfalls,
a dope version.
I've heard a marching band Waterfalls before.
Well, it's got trumpets prolific. And everything. Yeah,
so
of course.
Good.
Right? So, oh, but that funky bass. Tears from my eyes, no my lonely
cries. My only... You're like a nerd for bass lines.
With the wah pedal on it? Oh my God,
so
good.
So good.
So, no shade meant at certain musicians, but there's kind of a level of tier of quality and trustworthiness. If you're buying something endorsed by the record label that's a transcription, here is how to play the guitar solo from Freebird, that is probably pretty accurate.
Sure.
Not always accurate, but probably pretty accurate. Next level of trustworthiness, this might surprise you, some teenager on YouTube.
Sure.
Because you can see somebody and see that it actually sounds right, and you can actually see their hands playing the keyboard in this case, or a guitar or whatever, and go, that is probably pretty darn close. The lowest level is the guitar tab culture.
Okay.
Which is some guy typing out just text, it's not even images like music notation, showing you which chords to play and which frets to put your fingers on for a guitar chord. That person may or may not know anything about how any of this works. And that set of resources says B minor.
Sure.
Right?
Okay.
The guitar tabs tend to be, no offense to my compatriot guitarists, tend to be the least informed. Because the YouTube person may have used a guitar tab to figure out the chords, but then they went on and actually they've created a product that sounds like the result.
Yeah.
Whereas, anyways,
did
that's
anyone
a long
ever
answer.
Ask Babyface?
Somebody could, when could he just know? Ask Babyface. Babyface certainly knows, but
because I'm telling you, T-Boz and Chili don't know.
Probably
they were
not. They're not musicians.
Well, okay. They were plucked to like join this group for sure from like kind of from obscurity. Like they were working at like a beauty counter. They weren't trained musicians. They were just given things right. to sing. Yeah.
I mean, with really, really good voices.
Yeah. And like a good vibe. And they were sure. really eager to make sure that the vibe matched. And they tried a couple different combinations of girls out before they manufactured TLC.
By the way, I'm not trying to say there are more than one kind of musician, right?
Sure.
So Babyface is a professional songwriter. He probably plays several instruments. He probably knows more music theory than I know, right? That doesn't mean that's the only way to be a musician,
I love how
right?
I say he probably does. Like, I think it's clear.
Oh, when it comes to jazz idioms, I promise you he knows more than
yeah.
I know.
Are there any?
I probably know more about hexachordal combinatoriality than
he
does, though.
Obviously. That's really fun to say. Hexachordal, what is it?
Hexachordal combinatoriality.
Hexachordal combinatoriality. Oof.
Yeah. We'll get back to that probably never.
It's almost as good as the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis.
Ooh. Are we
so
having
great.
A...
When
are
I
we
having a... Enough? Yeah. Dopaminergic pathways? What?
Oh, we can do
that's
it. Negative harmony.
Good.
Okay, cool.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, anyway, so point being, the hook, it's ambiguous what key we're in, okay? What about the next sections of the song? If we hear the verse,
hey, you want my love? Well, that's all right. We'll be there for you more than noon and night.
Okay, so let's just listen to the melody. Does that give us any new information that helps us make our decision? That's just the same notes that we heard in a different order.
It doesn't sound as majory to me. It sounds like flatter.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Lower.
It
this part of the song gives us very little information. There's
sure.
only two chords happening.
Oh.
And it does lean on the minor a bit.
Yeah,
more.
It's
that
kind
last
of a drag.
That one last one's our F sharp minor, which was the one that you thought didn't make sense, but here it is here. That sound. It is leaning on that, but these are two chords and these melody notes existed in the hook. It's no new information. We're still completely unsettled, right? No help at all. So what the heck? We need to listen, I would say, to the end of the hook. Not the baby, baby, baby line, but the next part. And now I think we're getting somewhere. By the way, does this remind anybody else of You Gotta Be by Desiree?
Yeah.
Yeah. You gotta be cool, you gotta be calm, you gotta stay together. All I know, love will save the day.
It's the same song. Is that Babyface too?
I don't think it's Babyface, but it has such a similar move, which is weird because the Desiree tune is not ambiguous in what key it is. It's clearly in a key that maintains the same throughout. I say a key. I don't know. I think it might be in the key of F or something like that. In any case, when we play the chords to that last section, things get even more confusing. And we have this kind of funky chord progression we get. So remember how in the first part of the hook, the middle chord didn't make sense in the key of B?
Sure.
The C sharp minor did not exist, and so that made it impossible for it to be. But it did fit in the other options. This is the opposite. The second chord only makes sense in the key of B, doesn't make sense in the key of F sharp minor or the key of A. So does that mean it's B minor? Are we back to this one? This is a deep investigation. Let's listen to the melody. Does the melody give us more information? Tell me if that last note feels like home.
Well, when you put in that pretty chord, yeah, it
yeah,
does. It feels like a major chord.
Finally, yeah, it ends on an A
yeah.
major. Well, I played an A major. It doesn't play A major
sure.
there. It ends on an A, and there's something about when she sings that word that last word, it sounds nice. Like we're in the key of A, which is wild. Let me play that section one more time. When she says, got to love me deep, it sounds like we're done. The wild thing is, we did get an A chord. This section, this little turnaround at the end, has an A chord, but it's an A7 chord, which is not in the key of A. It fights against. So the melody reinforces A, even though the chord progression is kind of wild. So wrapping up our investigation, I'm going to bring it back to that original hook, and I'm going to play each of the three chord options. Tell me which one sounds like home. Here's B minor. Yes?
No.
No. Okay, that was B minor. Next That's one.
Gross.
Baby, baby, baby.
Kind of all for me? No.
No for me. You? Okay, yeah. It's close though.
It's closer, but it doesn't have that lift that you want for me.
Here we go. Last option.
Baby, baby, baby.
I mean, I'm standing by my previous assertion that that's it.
You were right. Your instinct was right.
Yeah.
I think the internet scholars of guitar tabs might not agree. But the crazy thing is, we go the entire song. That's the key of A major. Mm-hmm. We don't have a single A major chord. We have A7 chords, but those have notes that break the idea of A major.
Sure.
In them. So this song feels very rooted in A because of things the melody does, because of things the chords do, but there's always some tension. There's something in there disrupting it, so it doesn't quite feel right.
Mm.
And it makes this ambiguity that I think can be associated with sort of the smoothness of this kind of R&B backing track, this groove, that comes from it not being so obvious. You have these more complicated harmonies, this sort of jazziness to it. And that ambiguity, I'm really curious if this ties in with other things you want to talk about. This can be effective in some pop songs. So here's a few examples of other songs that don't play the main chord really ever. This is the Psychedelic Furs. You remember them?
No.
You don't. 1982, no. Love My Way. You don't know this song?
No, it's like a poor man's David Bowie.
Oh, it's so good though. Because a poor man's David Bowie is still very good.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah, so that song's in the key of G, but it never plays it.
Okay.
Here's one maybe you've heard. This is Fleetwood Mac, 1977 hit Dreams.
I've heard that once or twice.
You've
yes.
heard that once, yes, one no. or 2,000 times.
Yes, for
probably.
Sure.
C major, never plays C major.
Interesting.
One more example. This is Dig by Incubus. Do you know Incubus?
I do know Incubus.
2007. I swear this is in the key of F sharp. Specifically F sharp mixolydian. We'll get into that maybe
Ooh,
another
I
day.
I love mixolydian.
My students, I brought this to one of my classes, my songwriting class a few years ago. They vehemently disagreed with
Ooh.
My key. It's ambiguous. Take a listen.
Incubus gets like very stereotyped to be a certain way, and you hear a song like that and it just kind of it changes your perception of Incubus because they're like a very great band.
Yeah, I like Incubus. We,
yeah.
Maybe we'll come back to them another time. So
wow.
In any case, this ambiguity is pretty uncommon, but
sure.
It does happen. And it can make for a sort of feeling of instability, but also depth
yeah.
within those songs.
And I love that, like to connect to TLC's vibe generally. They're always, I'll say, huge TLC fan, very, very interested in the behind the music of TLC. Because there always was this underlying tension and this ambiguity that even in early interviews you watch with them, they're quick to say, like, we're not R&B, we're not a hip hop group, we're a pop group. But later, as they get through Ooh on the TLC tip and then Crazy Sexy Cool definitely hits more like an R&B album. And then Fan Mail starts to kind of break their convention a little bit, which is their third album. And that's where you see a lot.
Unpretty's like acoustic guitar
pop
song.
Yes. And they start to really challenge a lot of ideas of what you have about the genre, which I think is really interesting. But under the surface, there was so much tension in their group around that time. The transition between Crazy Sexy Cool, which was critically a highly acclaimed album. Like, they won lots of awards for it. They sold tons of records. But they were broke because they were splitting their money three ways.
Kidding.
They were paying out management. They almost had to declare bankruptcy. They had no money. And there was a speech that they gave at the Grammys saying, hey, thanks for all these awards. Like, can you send us, essentially, I'm paraphrasing,
cash.
Can we just have some cash? Because we're broker than broke.
Wild.
Because they didn't manage their money well. And then they got new management and things changed up. You know, we talk about baby, baby, baby in the song. And I know it's not talking about pregnancy and it's not talking about, like, making babies, but...
Well, they're talking about making babies in the colloquial sense,
sure.
Right?
Sure. But also, like, TLC came up in a time when the AIDS epidemic kind of came into a more hetero lexicon and heterosexual...
Well, sure, the whole Left Eye condom on her glasses. Yeah.
So while that was happening...
Waterfalls, of course, that's one of the verses.
Right? Yep. And talking about safe sex and things like that, Chili... Rosanda got pregnant during that first album and openly talks about how it was her boyfriend Dallas that she was with for a long time. She got pregnant when she was 20. And
is that Dallas Austin?
Yeah.
The producer.
Yeah, the producer. And he had her have an abortion and she didn't want to, but she did because she was just, she's like, wow, this is my career's picking up. And, you know, so the irony of them preaching safe sex, but also kind of that circumstance happening too. It's just a really interesting juxtaposition. So she had an abortion and really regretted it. Like, she didn't want to. She wanted to have that baby. And he said no. And she was young. She was 20, right? And then later got pregnant by him again later in life and had that baby. And now he's a grown man, this child. And Dallas didn't stick around. She did it without him because he didn't want to have kids. So that second baby was during Fan Mail, so many, many years later. So there's just like a lot of really interesting connections you can make with what they did musically and what was happening biographically for them, which as a psychologist, like, I'm very, very intrigued by that. Like, just the connectiveness of all of these things, I think is just really, really interesting to me.
So I think of other early 90s pop songs.
Mm-hmm.
And not to overly stereotype things, but, you know, we've talked about, I don't know what order these are coming out in, but we talked about Ace of Base, right? The sign.
Sure.
Like, I don't feel like a lot of complexity and nuance was the name of the game when you're talking about top 10 hits in that era. And of course, TLC is going into the mid 90s and late 90s, of course. But if you think about these songs they were doing, they are pretty nuanced topically. And obviously, I'm trying to demonstrate musically, you know. To say nothing, like, I think it's probably been too long since I've reminded you all of the bass in Waterfalls. But that song obviously had a message to it. And I can remember being whatever, middle school or whatever I was when that came out, or elementary, I don't remember. And people were talking about the lyrics to that song.
Yeah.
And this is when I'm like 10 or 9 or whatever it was. And obviously, Baby, 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 we've talked about musically, it's got some nuance there. No Scrubs isn't exactly your typical pop song in terms of what the topic is. It's like kind of a diss track to
it
all
is.
The dudes of the world.
And so No Scrubs is a diss track to all the dudes in the world. And then they started this kind of like gender war with that song that people had diss tracks to them in response.
Oh, you're talking about Sporty Thieves.
No
Pigeons.
Yes.
Yeah, that was like the... the man equivalent. I felt like that was in like a joke, though. It wasn't like an angry retort, was it? I haven't heard it in 20 years.
There's a music video for it, and they looked kind of angry.
Okay, they look kind of angry. Mm-hmm. All right.
I have a question for you.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay, so the first time I had my own money and I went to like a record store to buy albums, I bought 3 albums, right?
One CD or cassette?
CDs.
Or record?
Okay. CDs. The first time I bought CDs.
Okay.
They were Bjork, with the song about silence on it. It's Oh So Quiet.
Whoa.
Metallica and Justice for All.
Oh my gosh.
And TLC, Crazy Sexy Cool.
That's quite the mix.
And I feel like that's so representative of my identity as a consumer of music. Like those are the 3 albums that represent me. And I still stand by that. If you could pick 3 albums that represent you, what would they be?
That represent me right now? Not
like
me when I was...
Your whole life. 1992? Like that's... Yeah. Or you okay. In 1992?
Because me in 1992, my first CD was Boys to Men 2.
Awesome.
Now, that wasn't my first album, but it was my first CD. I had tapes before that,
sure.
And records before that. Barely, though. The records were more like, you know, a Chipmunks record,
sure,
or something like that. Oh my gosh, this is crazy.
Right? Like the first ones that you went with your own money and bought.
Okay, so the first, so that's not the same necessarily, okay, that represent me, but it's not that different because I'm going to say that I know for a fact it's Boys to Men 2. But shortly after that, it might have been like Soundgarden Super Unknown possible.
Nice.
It might have, that might have been a little later, or like the Gin Blossoms. I was
yeah,
into
was.
My parents and my brother and I would listen to them together. It's like wholesome alternative rock, right?
Sure.
Not scary alternative rock. So early CD, Weird Al, man. Weird,
yeah,
Al's come up on another podcast, but it might be, I mean, I had some of his albums, but it would have been probably Bad Hair Day or whatever.
Yeah.
Would that have been the first CD? I don't know. It's funny because I remember the Boys to Men record. And then after that, it's like a wash because I started just buying a,
sure,
bunch of music. And a lot of that was used so I could get several of them for the price of a new one, right? And so it's like, I don't know, what was Weezer Blue Album? Like what was popular around when I was in middle school? Because I didn't get a CD player till I was around that year, right?
Same,
so 1994,
yeah,
or whatever that was, 94, 95. I mean, that's not that bad. If we said Soundgarden, Boys to Men,
and the Weezer Blue Album.
The Weezer Blue, or like
that's still pretty representative.
Weird Al.
Like, and Weird Al. Like, if I could stereotype, because I know you pretty well, we've known each other for years. I'm like, that sounds like Mark to,
yeah,
me. If I mashed up all those things, just as I think like Metallica and TLC and Bjork, you mash
that's
them up,
pretty
and you
funny,
get into,
yeah,
Nicole.
There, we're still a few years away from me getting into punk and ska,
sure,
music.
Like,
which,
no,
and
real
then,
big fish yet.
No real big fish. No Sublime, and we're still several years away from me getting into early 1900s French impressionist piano music.
Yeah, ditto.
And stuff like that. Or Steve Reich or other minimalism in the mid to late 20th century. So, yeah, wild. Okay, what are the best girl groups? Or do we need to save this conversation?
What are the best girl groups? I mean, I think TLC is the best girl group.
You think TLC?
I do.
Better than
me?
The Supremes?
Yes. Because they're, I mean, I don't know too much. It's all culturally specific. Like, in for my cohort, like, yeah, TLC is the best. TLC, better than Destiny's Child. Better than...
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I don't know.
I think,
Danny
so I think
King.
Beyonce is more culturally important than TLC, but I think TLC is more culturally important than Destiny's Child. Represents an era.
Mm.
Destiny's Child represents a transition to an era that Beyonce would then dominate.
And because I think if you said to Beyonce... I can call her up after we're done recording, but I think if I asked Beyonce, like, were you influenced by TLC, she would have to say yes, just because of when she grew up.
Well,
I mean,
and she was in the South, right? She was,
yes,
Houston, they were Atlanta. Like, there has to have been some, I,
yes,
mean, they're only a few years ahead of her.
And the fact that TLC was, like, kind of formulaic in a similar way to Destiny's Child, but they weren't as polished. It was very much like, they, oh, I know a girl that like works at the beauty store and she can sing, so let's get her in here and see if it works out. Like, and then, oh, L.A. Reid like has this got girl Chili, let's get her in here and see if you guys vibe.
Well, Chili, you know, Chili's Chili because she had to have a C. Crystal was her, the early first member, so they named the group.
TLC.
Based on the first letters of the name. And so they're like,
I didn't know
that.
Oh,
well, your name
actually
doesn't start with a C. You get to be Chili.
No, they named
I knew
her.
Ooh, I knew something you didn't know, and it wasn't about cords. Oh my gosh.
I did not know that. They
Listeners,
buried, yeah.
Check me. I think that's true.
I don't think that's true.
So, I mean, obviously, though, don't forget, they're the best girl group of all time because of this. Tears from my eyes, no more lonely
cries. My only maiden. R.I.P. Mark, let's do our outro credits, but with like an ASMR vibe.
I'm not sure I'm capable of participating in that with my vocal tone, so please be my guest.
Nevermind the Music is hosted by me, Nicole Vatcher, and Mark Pompany. Mark also produces. Please be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating and review. Let us know what you think on social media. We're Never Music Pod on all major platforms. You can also send us an email at nevermusicpod@gmail.com. Every so often, we'll do a mailbag episode where we answer all your burning questions. Thanks for listening.